The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
So the young guy on it that was on the under-20s last year, he turned around to me halfway through the game because you're too old. I was like...
he was backing it. You're his coach.
Tell me you dropped him.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetSetGo.ie.
A 30 million euro state-of-the-art interactive rugby experience is set to open in the heart of Limerick City in autumn 2022. We are delighted to welcome Munster, Ireland and Lions legend Paul O'Connell to the show this morning to talk about this exciting project. Paul, how are you getting on?
I'm very well, thanks.
So talk us through this project. What is happening?
Yeah, I suppose it's kind of a brainchild of JP McManus, where he was looking at Limerick City Centre and looking at projects that could help as part of the regeneration of the city centre. And a tourist attraction was one of the ideas. And I suppose one thing led to another. It ended up becoming a kind of a rugby experience. So it's a very nice location in 4041 O'Connell Street. It's in the middle of the city centre. It's going to be a beautiful building designed by Neil McLaughlin Architects. The inside of the building then is curated by a company called Event Communications. And it's, a digital interactive rugby experience is what it's supposed to do and it's what it's supposed to be. And it's, I suppose, maybe cementing rugby in the city centre. It's a very, I suppose Limerick is a big sports mad city. Rugby is a big part of the city. Obviously, junior soccer is a big part of the city as well. Hurling, football, all sorts of sports. But this is the idea we went with, and it's been, hopefully it's going to be a fantastic project now and a great attraction for people to the city centre, families, Irish tourists, international tourists. And I suppose it gives us a combination of things. You know, you have King John's Castle, you have Thomond Park, you have the Gaelic Grounds, you have the Hunt Museum, you have Bunratty Castle just outside the city as well. It gives a combination of things for a family to come to the city and to do over the space of a few days.
What will you be drawing from for this? Will it be mostly Munster? Will it be Ireland? Will it be international rugby?
No, it's international rugby. Yeah, it's not Ireland specific or Munster specific whatsoever. It's rugby from all over the world. The women's game, sevens, 15s. You know, the whole, the story behind it is that there's kind of two stories that runs throughout the experience. It's the journey from grassroots to legendary status and everything that goes in between, from, you know, the training required, the preparation required, that the backroom staff, the people involved in helping people play and enjoy the game. And then it goes through the five values of world rugby as well, and we use different characters to tell those stories. So you know, on paper it looks amazing, it looks spectacular, and hopefully we can deliver that.
The experience aspect of it, Paul, brings to mind like maybe something like the Storehouse or the Titanic experience in Belfast. Is that the type of, like, it's not just for a rugby nut, is that right?
Yeah. I suppose, look, I think any sports fan will enjoy it. I think anyone that's into tech or anything like that will enjoy it as well. Yeah, and it's an experience. It's, as I said during the week, there won't be many artifacts in the experience. It's more about experiencing the sport through, I suppose, digital pieces and little galleries throughout the experience.
Yeah, and your role in it, what are you, chairman of the committee?
I'm chairman. Yeah, there's a lot of people. I mean, Barry Hannon is probably the guy that works the most on it. He's our CEO. But I suppose we have a lot of people that we need to pick up the phone to, and we need, you know, past players. I mean, we've spoken to a whole host of past players and explained what the project is, and I've asked them, look, can we use your image in this, you know, and explain to them it's a not-for-profit set up. You know, most of the rugby players you speak to have heard of Thomond Park, they've been to Thomond Park, they've played in Thomond Park, or they've watched the game in Thomond Park, or they're eager to experience Thomond Park. So they know Limerick and they know Limerick's place in rugby. So everyone has been eager. Everyone we've spoken to, from Richie McCaw to, you know, Sean Fitzpatrick to Nigel Owens, all these characters, we picked up the phone to and said, this is what we're doing. They've all said, no problem, delighted to be involved. So we have a bit of a role in doing that, in chasing these people down, having a conversation with them and seeing if they get involved. So, and that's an important part of the project. Once we have those people involved, once we can use their images in it, we can create some pretty cool experiences for people.
It sounds class, Paul. So not going for the artifacts means you won't be shelling out for Adrian Barry's All Blacks poster behind his shoulder then.
Yeah, well, that could have a place. There will be a place for little bits and pieces like that, you know. But I know he's such a big Munster fan, I don't know if he'd ever let it go.
It's this not-for-profit thing that would just do for me, Paul, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'd break the deal, would it?
I wouldn't be a deal breaker.
What is life on the rugby front like for you at the moment, Paul? Is it, do you get an off-season in your coaching capacity? Do you always need to be on, or how do things work for you at the moment?
Yeah, we took a bit of a break after the America game, because, you know, we've kids and stuff that want a holiday or need supervision on their holiday. So, but mainly just watching games now and trying to follow what's happening and see what's happening in the world of rugby. You know, I mean, anything South Africa do with Razzie and Jacques is always pretty innovative. It may not be, you know, it may not be incredibly attractive, but there's always sound logic behind a lot of what they're doing. So they're always well worth watching. And same with Warren Gatland, you know, his way of trying to counteract what South Africa are doing is pretty interesting to follow as well. So you're just trying to, I suppose, keep up with the trend and see if there's anything worth copying or copying, pasting and editing it, I suppose.
Is running out to the pitch in a bib as the Mayor Ishka one of those things you're going to be copying?
Well, you see, they're very reliant on that, because Jacques Nienaber is obviously a qualified physiotherapist. So, you know, he wasn't just a water boy when he was with Munster or with the Lions. He was able to do more than run water. The physiotherapists are allowed outside the technical area while the game is on. So, you know, when Munster were playing, I remember him and the Lions, I was over at the World Cup, or and South Africa, I was at the World Cup. He's actually, you know, when teams were doing attacking lineouts, he was actually standing opposite his team's defensive line, calling the plays that he felt that the opposition were going to do, you know, because he used to do incredible research in his role as a defensive coach. So I'd say they've become really reliant on having a strong coaching personality on the sideline. And they've, you know, they've managed to exploit the rules to, obviously Jacques isn't allowed to be there now, so they've managed to kind of exploit the rules to having Razzie down there on the sideline.
It must be incredibly exciting going into a second test that these are the guys that are chasing the series rather than the other way around. Because as you say, there's something cunning about the pair of them, even the sort of wry smile when they're doing press. It sort of feels like they know a lot more than they let on at all times.
Yeah, look, I suppose they're all being a little bit careful. They all have their messages. You know, they're all very conscious that they're speaking to their own players as much as they're speaking to the press, I think. You know, I used to get annoyed with Warren Gatland. I think certainly in the earlier days he took a swipe off Declan Kidney, but you realize they're just playing a game. You know, even Razzie this week with the Twitter stuff, and they're just playing a game. They're not I don't think it's bad sportsmanship or anything like that. They're playing a game. They're doing what they can to win. They're using their logic. It may not be the logic we all agree with, or it may be not be the logic we see, I suppose, but they're using their logic to do what they can to win.
I noticed when you were name-checking the coaches earlier on, you didn't name-check Jaakko Johan, who's obviously one of the key personalities in all of this thing. I have to admit, when I'm looking at it, I'm really enjoying the sort of back and forth of the exchanges between, it's not even really Razzie versus Warren Gatland, it's like Razzie versus the world sort of thing. What, as a coach, when you're looking at that stuff, what's your impressions of what's going on, or yeah, the intrigue of it? Is it a sign of pressure on Razzie Erasmus, or what's your take on it?
I don't think it's a sign of pressure. I mean, I'd be speaking to people that have worked with him, and you know, most people are incredibly fond of him. They think that he's a brilliant people person, and you know, his players are his number one priority. So the people that are really close to him are big, big fans of his. I think then when you look at some of the stuff that goes on during the week, you know, you'd be wondering, I suppose you'd be wondering about his character, but I think he just looks at the game a little bit differently to other people. He looks at every single thing about the game a little bit differently to other people. I mean, I don't think the, you know, when you look at the GAA managers in the media and the build up to games here, no GAA coach here does any of that stuff, you know, engages in any of these hand grenades. They're always really careful, you know. Even you
couple,
look at
couple high profile exceptions, Paul, but yeah,
have we had a couple of high, even I just John Kiley the other week, I mean, yeah, you know, when they played Galway, he came out afterwards and apologized for some of the things he said. I think there's a real, yes, respectful attitude to it. We just don't really do it here. So when you see Razzie doing it, or you see Gats doing it, I think it seems very strange to us in Ireland, but they just look at the game differently. And I think that's something I would have noticed from Gatland, even going back to 2009. He does things differently. He looks at the game differently. He thinks about it differently. And I think the fun is in trying to figure out what he's thinking rather than trying to figure out exactly, you know, rather than trying to figure out the good and the bad of it.
Just on that, on the Warren Gatland aspect of it, and all the chat about Marius Jonker in the previous week, was that just, I mean, maybe the proof was in the game on Saturday, but was that stuff just trying to get inside the, in your view, trying to get inside the ref's head or the TMO's head to, you know, and maybe there's a similar element with the Razzie stuff, but they're just trying to deliver a message that has everybody kind of second guessing themselves.
Yeah, there's a reason you don't have a local ref for the test matches. You know, it's unfair on the referee. There's no doubt the referee will be going out of his way to try and do a great job, but he's under unfair pressure, and the same applies to the TMO. So, you know, I totally understand Warren Gatland's misgivings, and I totally understand why he would bring it up in the media, because he wants to put that touch judge under pressure. And I thought last week when I heard that it was going to be a South African TMO, I thought it was actually going to be beneficial to the Lions, because, you know, no matter what he did, he was going to be under pressure. And I think they put him under in an unfair position, really, to be honest with you. So for sure, Gatland was trying to put him under pressure in what he did in the media and the build-up.
Are you confident that the Lions are going to back up their first week performance, given the changes that Gatland has made for this weekend?
I'd say they'll play the same way. I mean, when you talk about their first week performance, I mean, it was a flick of a coin, really, who won the game. I mean, one or two decisions go either way and the other team wins the game, and one set of coaching staff looks great. And that's the way the South African games have gone, even in 2019. That's the way those games went. The Welsh game in the World Cup, you know, when they drew with New Zealand in 2019, they want to give you back the ball, and then they want to put you under pressure and try force you to make mistakes, and then they want to exploit those mistakes and score with in one phase or two phases and no more than that. They're not looking to create anything per se, and the Lions have more or less done the same thing against them. I mean, when Wales played South Africa in the World Cup, they kicked the same number of times. I think maybe South Africa kicked the ball once more than them. They effectively played the exact same game back at them. And that's what the Lions did at the weekend again. They played their game straight back at them. And it essentially becomes a flick of a coin who'll win. You know, who'll get the little bounce of a ball or who will get the refereeing decision. You got to give big credit to the Lions for scoring a mall try. I think that is a very, very difficult thing to do against South Africa. And I think you see that could have a lot to do with Dwayne Vermeulen not being in there as well. I think it's kind of an unseen thing that you don't realize he's missing. You want to see him carrying the ball, or you see him carrying the ball, you think he's a great player. You actually don't see a lot of what he does in terms of the South African maul or even the South African maul defense as well. So big credit to the Lions for scoring a maul try. But essentially, it's a little bit of a toss of the coin who wins the game, the way both of them are playing at the moment.
I remember one of the previous tours you mentioning afterwards that Justin Tupraker, one of those players that had gone into great detail about how they prepare or some technique. There was something that you took that you were kind of, if I remember rightly, sort of almost surprised that he was as sharing as he was. With that mindset or with your coaching at, I'm watching the game at the weekend, was there one player or move or theme that stood out for you in a way that you were like, yeah, we could actually, let's make a note of that. We could do that.
When you say we could do that, do you mean the Lions Ireland. Could do that Ireland. Or Ireland? Look, I think the high ball stuff is interesting. You know, I think certainly a few years ago, Ireland thrived on being excellent at chasing the high ball, being excellent at catching the high ball. And that's essentially where the Lions found a lot of, found a bit of a foothold in the game was that high ball work. And I think Ireland are pretty good at that, you know, and we have been for a while. It goes back a long time. I suppose it goes back to a bit of a, you know, the fact that we play in bad weather a little bit. It goes back to the GA a little bit, and it goes back to maybe Joe Schmidt in his earlier days putting a big emphasis on it for Ireland teams. So you'd see a lot of our wingers before training and after training, practicing high ball stuff. And because of that, there's a big body of work being built up. So I think it's a part of the game that we should never, underestimate it. You know, all these things come into fashion and out of fashion. And sometimes the high ball stuff, teams get really good at defending it, like England have done in the past against us. And then it kind of falls off again and you can start having a crack at it again. So that's one of the things. I mean, I do think maul defense and maul attack and scrum, you look at Tadhg Furlong and the job he did in the scrum at the weekend. You look at some of the big quality, big men that we have coming through, you know, those are places that you can really get a foothold into the game against teams. And the Lions did it well at the weekend. You know, you got to credit them for scoring a maul try. I know that it's probably a boring part of the game, but it's a very difficult thing to do at the moment. It's one of the reasons you see Exeter and Leinster and all these teams taking a quick tap from 5 metres out instead of going for the maul. It's become so difficult to score now. So you've got to give credit to the Lions for scoring that try.
Yeah, particularly against that South African team. Who's better under the high ball, Hugo Keenan or Simon Zeebo?
Oh, jeez, there's a question to ask a coach. I don't know. They're both very good at it. And it's great to have Simon Zeebo back. The more competition we have in all these positions, the better. You know, all these teams that have done well at the World Cup in the past, they've all had really deep squads. So when they've struggled with injuries, they've had quality players to come in. So it's great to have another quality fullback playing in Ireland.
One of the things that you mentioned there is about maybe learning from what the Lions are doing to a certain point. And I wondered, what was your reaction to Conor Murray temporarily being named British and Irish Lions captain? I think a lot of people were taken by surprise with that because he wasn't, it seemed, in the conversation for the Ireland captain role, let alone the Lions captain role going into this tour. Was it something that took you by surprise?
Yeah, it probably did. I mean, it probably... I suppose it meant that maybe they didn't see Owen Farrell as a first choice out half, maybe, you know, because he would have been the obvious candidate, maybe. I think that Gats kind of thrives on doing the not obvious thing as well. I think if you name Owen Farrell as captain, you know what you're going to get with Owen Farrell. And even if he's not captain, he probably behaved the same way as well. I would say Gats has probably massive respect for Connor, and he's probably thinking by naming him captain, he'll get a little bit more out of him. You know, I mean, Connor doesn't say a lot, but what he does say tends to be pretty accurate and on the mark. And it's probably the more of that you can get, the better. It probably means that Owen Farrell, you know, continues to behave the way he would always behave, even if he was captain or not captain, but you get a little bit more out of Conor Murray. And then probably other guys around him kind of go, you know, they kind of feel, I would say, that, you know, they're on a level with Conor, and it probably brings a bit more out of them. And then maybe as well, what I was thinking is that the fact that Conor hasn't done it before, people feel, you know, I need to help this guy here. I need to make sure this experience is good for him. And it brings other people out of his shell. I mean, that's where I was kind of seeing where he may have come at it. I mean, you know, like Gats named Sam Warburton captain of Wales at 22. You know, he wouldn't have been a, you know, Sam would say it himself, he wouldn't have been a big leadership guy. He wouldn't have had a lot of opinions on what they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. But he grew into the role, and probably other people grew into the supporting role around him. And I would say that was the logic around the Connor selection. I'm not sure.
One more for me, Paul, just on the possibility of Donnacha Ryan, it looks like potentially joining Ronan Na Gara at La Rochelle, another big name Irish second row getting into the coaching thing. But you've obviously spent a bit of time over there, and it'll be a different dynamic for him, obviously, given he's got one of the natives running the show. What's your thoughts on it? Like, he obviously seems like he might have the option to play on maybe in the Pro D2 or to get into the coaching thing. What would your advice be? Maybe he has called you, but what would your advice be if he picked up the phone?
I think the big thing is you need to know what you're going to stand for in what you're going to do, you know? So I don't know what his role is going to be. If his role is coaching the line out, he needs to figure out what he believes in and how he wants to coach it. Then he probably needs to figure out what they believe in, you know, what are their things that they want to keep as part of their game. Because, you know, in La Rochelle, they have a really interesting way of defending lineouts. We would have seen it against Leinster, that no other team does. That I'd say if you tried to copy it, you'd get it wrong, because there's a lot of detail in it. So, And I would say the players are very, very attached to it, because it's given them an awful lot of success. So he's going to have to know what he stands for, but he's going to have to know as well what they stand for and what they want to do. And he's going to be able to have to, you know, find what's in the middle with that. So, and then it's just about being clear and concise and consistent with the players. I think Rog and John O'Gibbs obviously were running the club really well there. It was a very happy camp. They seem to sign quality players. They sign the players that suit their system and their way of playing. So I don't think it's the same challenge it might be in other French clubs, you know. So it's a great place for him to start. And as well as that, you know, he has a real ally in Rog, you know, someone he can really discuss things and argue things and bounce things off, you know, because Rog has been on the journey. He went to Racing, probably found it tough at times. And then I suppose saw the light in the Crusaders, and now he's back in La Rochelle. He's a real big body of work, not the same exact same work as Donnacha Ryan is going to be doing, but the exact same experience as Donnacha Ryan is going to be having. So he'll be able to get great advice there. So I think it's a great place for him to start. And I think he'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, just a reminder that we have Paul O'Connell with us here on OTBAM, because a €30 million state-of-the-art interactive rugby experience is set to open in the heart of Limerick City in autumn of next year. Paul, it sounds fantastic. It's a really exciting project. Best of luck with everything, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Okay, cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
There's a young guy on it that was on the under-20s last year. He turned it up to me halfway through the game because we're too old. I was like...
He was backing it. You're his coach.
Tell me you dropped him.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.